My name's Debo Powers, and today is August 27th, 2013. I'm interviewing for the first time Esther Chrisman. This interview is taking place at 305 Salish Court in Kalispell, Montana. This interview is sponsored by the North Fork Landowners Association and is part of the North Fork History Project. So, Esther, tell us a little bit about your early background, where you were born, where you grew up.
Well, I was born in a little town called Leland, Illinois, LaSalle County, and the date was 7-12-27, been a day or two ago, and I was the youngest of five daughters. My father was a small-town carpenter, probably he built houses and such too, but he started out, both of my parents were immigrants from Norway, and he started out barn building when he came young. Detested two things in his life, and one of them was chicken and bedbugs, which he had plenty of on his old barn raising tours.
So did you grow up, you spent most of your childhood in Illinois?
Yes. And when, then I married when I went to school. I went to Illinois College in Jacksonville, Illinois. It was actually called the Athens of the West. It had an illustrious history. It was founded in 1829, so it was the first college west of the Alleghenies. It was founded by members of the Yale Band, they call it, and it's still for a very small college. It has a Phi Beta Kappa chapter. It's right up there with Best Buys on the list and so forth. And it's only 20 miles from my married home, so I kept connections with it. I married young, and my husband and we met at Illinois College, and we're married in 1948.
And when did you first come to the North Fork?
In 49.
In 49.
22, I was actually. No, it was a great adventure. The first year we were married, we had a vacation, and we went to the Tetons. And we spent the month there, and see, my husband was in grain business. He had an elevator. And so there was always a lull between the wheat, the beans, and the corn. So you chose your... Nothing much was going on at that time, early on, during those months. So we poked around in the mining camps, and I swear Central City had gravel roads then. We looked at the face on the barroom floor. We just poked around, and we did stayed in the Tetons. We did everything but climb the mountain. We weren't hikers. We were horseback riders. And figured we were done with that. It's beautiful. So the next year, Arvo and Helen Foreman are very important to our life, both here and in Illinois. Baird's father died at the young age of 61. And Arvo was Baird's father's lawyer. So Baird, he became Baird's lawyer and kind of a father figure. So at 49, Orville hadn't been encouraged to come to Montana, but they had purchased their place probably in 48, which is the Peterson place up north, and they had two homesteads, and so he encouraged us to come out, and we did. And so my first trip to Glacier was when we stopped to see what Helen was staying at Kelly's camp. And she and the kids were there, and Peggy, her oldest, is not much younger than I. Orville had just left with the kids for the cabin, taking the first load of furniture to their new cabin on the Peterson place. So that was the beginning of the North Fork.
So that was the first time you saw the North Fork?
Yeah, and this was actually the first visit to Glacier. We didn't spend our whole vacation with them, but we did go up and sleep in a tent and help them scrub out. And they had the bunkhouse was a garage and so forth. And we met Emil Peterson, who the notorious, the mildest, most gentle man, It's hard to believe later on I found out he was the one who shot Billy Crude. But no, but this was the beginning of a long history with the Foremans and our sub. I think they were called mentors. I mean, mm-hmm. we weren't, you know, bosom buddies. They didn't. I mean, we shared dinners and we went out to mm-hmm. dinner and such, but not like your next door neighbor or some contemporary, but they were just wonderful to us and very important.
Did you, at what point did you decide to buy land up here?
Well, we had been camping in Glacier, what we called Avalanche Campground, the first campground there, the first year was where we set up housekeeping and so forth. And we traveled often with Baird's sister, Garnet, was married to Bob Crow at that time. And it was about 4 years before we had any children. So we had this series of, we'd go up and help the Foremans for about a week, and so then go about, we didn't just land on them and spend our whole vacation with them, but we did hiking in the park, and this, we considered this one campground in Avalanche ours. And it was for years. And I know the first year they were doing always construction on Logan Pass, and they had big trailers in the back of Avalanche where they spent the summer, so there were people there, the same people all summer. But we did a lot of hiking, and saw on this side, we were so picky, we thought it was really ugly on the other side of the park.
Side.
We just loved the big trees. And of course, we always had friends here in Kalispell. When you went under the viaduct, you were out of town, and trees were little, still recovering from the 1910 fire. And it was really ugly till you got to the North Fork.
And that and you park. Thought was the most beautiful, huh?
Yeah. But since then, we've changed. I know I remember one particular hike to Granite Park and went over to Mini Glacier and went over. And I can remember the day was so ungodly hot. And I remember I've never made the trip again. One little spot where we got a drink, and I thought, I don't like this.
So what year was it that you bought land?
58.
58.
What happened, see, when we had children, Alan made his first trip to Montana when he was 3 months old.
Oh.
We had a ranch down at Polson also, so we had hoped to live there, but those plans fell through. Mm-hmm. We'd even picked the spot for our house and so forth, but pipe dreams are made of that. And mm-hmm. Anyhow, he had, bad tonsils, asthma. He could not stand the variation from the temperatures being day and night were too great for his little lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And we camped with him and such, but he just couldn't stand it. We had to have shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we stayed at after the kids were born, we'd stay at Foreman's Lake Cabin. We did a lot of work there. And we rented Ralph Thayer's, or he wouldn't take any money for it. But we still have the table on the Hammer Cabin porch that we hammered together down at Ralph Thayer's.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy added to our rocks at the doorstep that we'd brought up. And he told us, when we were down there, that if we need another mattress, he had a brother who lived down in Home Ranch Bottoms. And so that was a bear grass mattress, and we might want to go down there. You could tell his place by the big spruces right by the gate. Well, I can't remember who has it now, but anyhow, we went down, picked it up, and brought it back to the camp and rolled it in a dead chipmunk. And I can't for the life of me remember where we slept in that cabin.
I don't remember either.
I don't either. No.
What was it that you loved about the North Fork early on? What drew you there?
Well, it was not sweltering like Illinois, and it was just the adventure of it, and just looking at those beautiful mountains. And we had a preference for the tall trees. At that time, we were young and fickle, and we just... going through all the states between here and there, counting, playing games about how far was the next hill. But as the years went on, we discovered that there is beauty in every area. Mm-hmm. In fact, when we went back to Illinois to see the corn and the beans and such, that we had just taken for granted. Yeah. It's beautiful. Uh-huh.
Sometimes the North Fork teaches you that. It teaches you that there's beauty, beauty everywhere. And
well, too. But the thing is, the foremans are responsible for most of the people we met there in those early years. Mm-hmm. And Ralph and the Holcombs are so dear to us. And later on, in 58, the Saundersons. Wurtz is, I don't know why, I think you tended to have a neighborhood thing. Mm-hmm. Like we stopped and we bought things from the Wurtzes. It's like I know the Mosses were close. They stayed close by the Wurtzes. Now they know personal things about the Wurtzes. We didn't. But they were acquaintances and we thought highly of them. Mm-hmm. And we stopped there to buy her moccasins and mm-hmm. her cool. pillows and stuff. But it wasn't the close relation. I know when we bought the place in 1958, and it was from Bart Monahan. Mm-hmm. And Bart Monahan... we have reversed our roles here.
These will make a lot of noise on the tape.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah. Now, I wrote one of my essays yeah. was on buying our little cabin at the, and Baird and Orville had gone down to try to speak to Bart about purchasing that homestead. Mm-hmm. And he was very hard of hearing, heard nothing. Mm-hmm. And somehow they went down there and... Bart had some ungodly inflated idea what his property was worth. Somebody who was had tried to lease it for oil or something had given him this big song and dance about how much it was worth. Mm-hmm. And the foremans had bought their homesteads for $10 an acre.
Wow.
And
wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah. At current prices, we wouldn't have been up there, Well, it was bad enough. I mean, we had to really suffer to buy the place. And I know Larry Wilson is always saying, they thought, boy, we've gone crazy. We paid something like, I don't know the exact, but between $6,000 and $7,000 is what we paid for the Bart Monahan homestead.
Mm-hmm. And it was 160 acres?
150 acres.
And but the thing about it is, I mean, that was a lot of money, and we had to pull in our belts, do without a lot of things to keep pay for that. And then the next year, Lloyd and Ruth, Lloyd had discovered that he had
lupus,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said he would only treat him if he went to lived at the coast at sea level, and he had the property next to us. And so he was, having to leave North Fork and so forth. So he sold us the Tally place. Mm-hmm. And it was a good thing because we were getting water from a spring, which is right on the, between the two places. But that's how we wound up with the acreage we have.
Which is, how much?
310.
310 acres. Mm-hmm. I didn't even introduce you on the tape.
That's okay. I wasn't going to say anything.
Well, she has to. Depend on her. You know.
That's right. Carrie, what's your last name?
Wiley.
This is Carrie Wiley.
Esther's daughter.
Right.
Yeah. But no, this the evolving of this, our North Fork life. We were introduced mainly to the foremans, you know, to the mailman, mm-hmm. Ralph and Esther Day. Ralph died, Esther took over, and Mom, Pa, Holcomb. The thing is, we used to have, when we bought this place, we had the Monahan place. It was this little shacky cabin that the bears had hibernated in the basement, and it was just so. And we thought, well, maybe it'd be a tool shed or something. We just couldn't imagine. Ma Holcomb, always cheerful. I never heard her say an ugly word to anybody about anything. And she comes up there and she says, oh, you'd be surprised what a little whitewash would do. And I thought, horrors. But then we thought seriously about it and uh-huh. thought if Ma Holcomb thought it was worth salvaging, we would. Uh-huh. But this cabin is a work of art in itself. It was put up with bark on the logs. Uh-huh. Monahan had lived there I don't know how many years. We've never been able to get much history on him. Nobody needed to know. I mean, he was some kind of a government employee. But in later years, I know in hunting expeditions, a lot of Baird would go up for hunting. In fact, mm-hmm. one year, Orville had a bunch of his lawyers, bankers, and so forth, and he invited Baird to go with. Karen says, what do you suppose he's asking me for, dishwashers? But anyhow, you know, if it's a younger, able-bodied somebody to come along and help. They had a wonderful time, and our local banker, Johnny Peters, got lost. And he went, Johnny went down and got lost. He went, meandered down, because our place through the woods isn't too long from Poorman's. Mm-hmm. And he came down there, and he was lost, and he saw Bart Monahan sitting inside playing solitaire at his table in front of the window, and he got no response, wouldn't answer. And he's deaf as a post. Mm-hmm. So we've had to wait till Bart died. And he went to the county home. I don't know how many, a couple years anyhow, the cabin was empty mm-hmm. when he went down there. And so Arville was out here, took care of the business end of the buying and the sale that they have when somebody mm-hmm. dies in common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Estate sale. Yeah, yeah. Sale for
and,
taxes.
And he bought it for us. Mm-hmm. We were still back in Illinois, and we had the thing. So that's how we got it. Uh-huh. And
you knew a lot of the early homesteaders up there. You knew the Holcombs and the... Who all did you know up there?
Oh, well, let's see. Pa Holcomb and Ralph Thayer mm-hmm. came to survey the ground after we purchased it. And we pulled a travel trailer out there and because we discovered that kids got sick with everything, eating in restaurants or taping them away and giving them food they needed and so forth. But they slept in little slings above our bed in the trailer. And we had a little refrigerator, and we had a shower and a stool in the trailer. And what we did is sink a gas can out there for our septic thing and the dirt. And so when they came to survey, I had to fix them lunch. Well, 10 cans of what? But you know, I had to bake bread every day. And I tried to do it in the morning again. Kids were sleeping in down bags, and as soon as they started stirring, the down would come flying up. We must have eaten more down that. But they'd eat up all the bread I made. You know, your little stove, little pan. They'd eat everything I made one day. That's why I have to do it every day. It was during that time, let's say, what must have been, was that the quick length? I don't know, but anyhow, I was so rushed and such that I thought, well, I hadn't seen any bears, and so without washing them out and having limited water, mm-hmm. I threw them in a pasteboard box outside the door. Well, that was my first awakening. on the night, in the middle of the night, I heard this, I looked out there, it was moonlight night. Here was the biggest black bear you ever saw, just sitting up there posing. And So Barrett Mahooted and Hall. Well, it wasn't a few nights later, I thought the bear was back. And Barrett went out with his flashlight, and I was going around the looking out the windows, and he kept saying, "Won't you see it? Don't you see something yet?" "No, nothing out there." Well, we didn't sleep well, and the kids were sleeping up above us, and so we could see the campus things were
shaking. The trailer was shaking.
And the next day, he was going up to help Foreman's with a project, and Barrett says, "Well, he were late because he overslept." And says, "Jim, I think we had a bear last night." He says, "Hell no!" Says, "You had an earthquake. It was Quake Lake in Yellowstone."
Yeah, that was 64, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. That, yeah.
You thought it was a bear, and it was pretty.
Yeah, it was just like it was rocking the tree, like he was just rocking the, you know.
And you could hear feel the earthquake from way down there.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, but anyhow.
What other homesteaders did you know?
Who were the people that laughed so much? That lived in Elliot's.
Oh, the Raiders.
Raiders.
No, yep, really cool outhouse.
Yeah. They were just. I know the first time I met them was hunting season, and they came up, and we slept in the loft in the Foreman's homestead cabin there. They sat downstairs, and we'd go, you know, we didn't have a lot of light, go to bed pretty early. But I can remember just about rolling off the mattress upstairs because they were so funny. And Madge and Ollie, we had Madge and Ollie would come down and have dinner with us. We'd make snow ice cream. And we'd send them little remembers. I remember one January we had a nice note from Madge in January, thanking us for whatever we'd sent them for Christmas. Said, "Holly doesn't have his elk yet." But let's see who else.
Well, Ralph and Esther Day.
Yeah, they were the mailman. Uh-huh. They we had a wonderful relationship with them. Esther. I know.
They had Ray Hart's place, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Him.
Or I should say, Ray has their place.
Okay, she had this place. Well, not only that, we have a water tank. The Holcombs provided it.
Our first water tank
was in a tree that made it run back into the cabin. Mm-hmm. Came from the Holcombs. When we bought the cabin, Monahan had this little heating stove and made a little one like that. And Esther Day says, "Why?" Says she was moving to town, and she said, "You take my stove and I'll put the one you have here." So in Ray Hart's cabin probably is Monahan's little stove, but we have this little enameled stove in the cabin. Mm-hmm. And Ralph, after he had a stroke, I don't know whether I should say this or not, but we helped them buy the place downtown. Mm-hmm. And when she had a chance to sell it, the place, half of it, she wanted to repay us with the other half. So we owned the other half of Ray Hart's place. Mm-hmm. And we let Bud Holcomb have it, but she lost it. But we used to come out hunting. Bud Holcomb, the son of Harry and Lena and Esther Day's brother, used to meet us at the train, take us up. Mm-hmm. I can't remember how awful it was. He had a little coop of some sort. I mean, he was just wonderful to do this. You know, this was a long way from in the 50s.
Yeah. Didn't one of them have one of those Woody station wagons?
What?
Didn't somebody have a Woody station wagon that picked us up?
No, the Foreman's had a wooden station wagon. Mm-hmm. But no.
Did you mostly come out in the summer or during hunting season?
We only missed one year of driving out at least once. mm-hmm. every year, and often we came on the train. In later years, we flew out.
Uh-huh. And how long would you stay?
I missed 1 year, the year she was born.
What? How long would you stay?
Oh, well, you know, early on, we'd only spend a couple of weeks and just work like crazy and drive, barrel out here and barrel back. And I think we had a wonderful time. And by the end of Baird's life, we were spending 5 months, which was ideal. He and I had somebody who could take care of his business. Uh-huh. It was always our desire to live here, but there was just no way we could make a living.
Right. Yeah.
When his installation in Meridosha sold more fertilizer than the whole state of Montana, fat chance we could live on what he could sell here. And elevators, he had an elevator too, so mm-hmm. they paid partially. Retired, supposedly.
So when you came up to the North Fork, what was the social life like
well,
in the North Fork?
We were there for the beginning of the hall. Mm-hmm. The Madge had donated the land, and I think Baird helped, you know, but when you're only there for a couple of weeks, you're not part of it. But no, early on, we went, they had square dances mm-hmm. over at McFarland's. I probably shouldn't tell this either. I was so young and naive. I got over there and I was sticking. I didn't know any of the people, you know, of Helen, and she knew everybody was talking to him. So I stick next to my husband and he goes outside intermission or whatever and I go out there. My God, they're passing the bottle.
I've heard those stories.
I don't know what to do. You know, you're so young and you're so worried that you're going to look bad or appear stupid, and it's not easy to do. But I managed. But no, they were very nice. But we went there, and I can remember one Halloween party. We were there for a Halloween party during hunting season. And it was most fun. They bobbed for apples, but they had them on strings. And I can still remember gnawing an apple with Walt Hammer. And I remember when they put he built our cabin, you know, at one of our cabins. And it's really funny because I have closet doors. The handle's way up here.
Oh.
He's tall.
He's a tall guy.
He put him where he wanted to open the door. Mm-hmm. But no, the hammers, so we decided that, let's say it's social life or around social
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm. And then later on when I was a teenager, they had pie socials. And
oh, yeah, all those pies, shells, and ice cream. Mm-hmm.
They had pie and ice cream socials, didn't they?
The thing that
we still have it.
Oh, but,
right.
You
it's
know, they'd have the square dances. What really amazed me, there was never a Saturday night at midnight that somebody had baked beans. Mm-hmm. Always brought baked beans. You know, this is part of any...
Mm-hmm. I had heard that they danced, they had the square dance, and then they would stop at midnight and eat.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's what we did. And it was really wonderful because it was everybody from 6 to 60. I mean, uh-huh. I can still see Mark Holcomb dancing with Mark and Grandma, Lena, mm-hmm. yeah. Things like that. It was just one of those things.
Yeah. And Florence Gaffney out there dancing with us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Larry dancing with everybody. Hitting on them. Well, the thing is, I'm very, very good friends with Naomi, and she's well aware of her family.
This is Larry Gaffney.
Yeah, yeah.
Larry Gaffney, yeah.
But
so,
no.
When I first started coming to the North Fork and going to the hall, they used to talk about Granny Christmas pies.
Okay.
Now, who was Granny Christmas?
She was my mother-in-law.
Tell me about her.
She's the most remarkable woman. She was a licensed practical nurse, and if anybody, out of the laying on of hands, when you were sick, she had this wonderful demeanor. But boy, she went crazy when she thought it was her grandkids.
Talk about granny, not our grandkids.
No, she was, but she was quite a character. And she lived to 90, she died out here. And we brought her out or sent her out or came on the bus. She had to go back, she worked. But her pies were another thing. She made these pies, and Garnet Baird's sister, who lives here in town, and she would come out and spend the summers with her. We'd bring her out, and then she'd stay with Garnet, and then we'd take her back home. And Garnet went down to Arizona in the wintertime, and so we'd take Granny down there, and Garnet'd keep her for months, and we'd have a vacation, then take her back. But Garnet bought Madam Queen's cabin, and the kids helped her do that. We tried to buy that first before we bought Monahan's. I mean, they weren't ready to sell. But by the time we'd started ours and such, by marking this little 5-acre patch, it was a cute little cabin. And I've lost my train. Where do we go? What were we talking about?
Granny Christman.
Oh.
Her pies. Oh.
Well, she came out on the bus. Garnet lived in Jackson, Wyoming, and Garnet had to drive down to Rock Springs to pick her up. This was 1 year. Well, one of her boxes didn't come through, and so that's a long way from Jackson down to Rock Springs. So they went down to get the box, and it was full of Kleenex and lemon pie filling. Everybody thought Granny made these wonderful pies. They were out of a box.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They were wonderful.
Because they used to, you know, they'd have an auction at the hall.
I know. This was when I was a young adult.
And they'd have those auctions at the hall, and her pies would sell for $45, which was a lot of money.
Well, you bet. And, And it was just inconceivable that she did have a way with her meringue and such. I mean, not everybody can even make a box pie. She kept my kids chubby during their childhood with cookies and pies.
A lot of pie.
And she pleased one of Baird's very finest dog. Had an appetite for pie crust. You know, after Sunday dinner, everybody goes out to look at the garden or something, this back in Illinois. And Granny had brought pies in and set them on the kitchen table, come in, and all the crust just gone from her. That was classy. So that wasn't the only one. Yeah.
You told the story about the bear that was actually an earthquake, but were there other animals that you saw or had encounters with?
We never had an encounter, but we've had lots of, I mean, we could, when we lived in that hammer, that they would pass through.
Mm-hmm. The spring, when we kept food in the spring.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, of refrigeration, in fact, we were talking with Jason Cohen the other day about what stage you threw out the hamburger. Peely outside blue stuff. I don't know why we didn't die, but anyhow. We had, you know, the old camp bales, a big bucket, and ours was good and heavy aluminum.
With a lid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we put stuff over there in the spring, and the milk. And Carrie learned early on if she didn't want to eat something that was sour, it could be. Meat and vegetables, sour. But I said the kids over there, they had a way, and they weren't too sure that they were safe in the forest. And so Baird put them up a spring back along the hillside, and I saw this big confab going on back there, and as I go out there, well, it was pretty close to the deep, dark forest. they were a little scared back there. Mm-hmm. So we started this hooting wherever they were. They hooted, and so if they were a little unsure, we'd uh-huh. hoot back. So uh-huh. they know somebody was close. So this hooting went on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But they said
the aluminum bucket.
They sent him to the spring to get the bucket. It's not there. Well, they found it across the thing, and the big jaw prints right in it.
Yeah.
So we knew that the woods were inhabited.
And more recently, we've seen a lot.
Yeah. One year we had, I think, 8 different bears. And Baird, it was a year one that was droughty and no huckleberries, very little to eat. And we had 8 different black bears come through. Uh-huh. And what he did is he peppered them with burp shot. We never saw the same one twice. Mm-hmm. But that one,
mm-hmm.
yeah, well, just lately, when was that? When Tim was up there last fall?
Mm-hmm. During hunting season.
Mm-hmm. He has gone out, he takes his mace or whatever.
Bear spray.
Mm-hmm. Wherever he goes up there, mm-hmm. and he does a lot of work. Because he's, I know, gone down. He carried his gun when he discovered that he was walking down to check the generator, turn the generator off or something or another, and the snow was falling in the bear tracks. So that we know, there's evidence that they're there,
mm-hmm.
but they may have really never been troubled.
Mm-hmm. Once, the guy for Creek Grizzly.
Oh, mm-hmm. oh yeah, he got in the homesteader cabin. Oh, we thought it was so clever. He had pushed the door in, and actually the whole keeper had gone out. He just pushed, had strength enough to do this. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing to eat in there. There mm-hmm. wasn't any grease or anything there.
Nope.
But he found baking powder and baking soda. He got those on, and it was wet. He was wet, and this was wet.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was so neat with those, you know, soda and baking powder. Prince, we didn't clean it up, and then came the day of reckoning. You try to get that glue cement up, and it
mm-hmm.
yeah,
difficult.
It was hard.
Yeah,
mm.
But to this this cabin, if you ever see it, you'll be amazed. We had it all reconstructed after we got some other houses and were comfortable. Always a project on the North Fork. All the purlins are pitch black.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the logs had bark on them. So, we used pancake turners, screwdrivers. We scraped that out.
We actually have movie videos of doing that.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And it was all the chinking was Monahan's underwear.
Wrong underwear.
Oh, then Ralph Day had to make busy work for him. He and his brother came up and stayed, and they were going to chink the cabin. Well, they weren't any master workmen. And that chinking just kind of fell out, too. So Walt Hammer rebuilt the cabin for us. We had to put in a loo log and mm-hmm. whatever. And it's fixed up nice. And
mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, we have Esther Day gave us a little table down there, a little tilt-top thing that had places for our newspapers underneath. Baird made a little cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
He was no carpenter, I know, but died when he made the first doghouse in Illinois. He was held together by 6'11 nails. I think it was made of nails. And I thought, I hope my father never sees that. And he burned out. Oh, it made some beautiful things. My table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he built this cabinet to make it mouse-proof.
Yeah, and he fitted it inside. I mean, not overlapping door, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we had this cabin that anything could walk in the through the floors. And I can still remember Granny. We'd had this bench behind the stove, and had the bacon back here, and she's cooking on the stove here. And a pack rat is up there. He ate the bacon behind her.
Oh. inside the cabin.
Well, the thing is, we put our food in this cabinet that he built, the sink in there was Ralph Day's sink from the chicken thing he had down there at the ranch. He had some chicken house or something. But it's a little chicken house thing he put there. I believe it was real Rube Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate to have a husband.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So life was really different in the North Fork than Illinois, wasn't it?
Yes. The nicest thing. We had our mail. Well, I made a mistake, though, 1 year. I had the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We burned papers for days trying to go. All the advertising, all that stuff. So I never did that again. But when we, it was wonderful in later years. You get the magazines on Tuesday. You could sit down and read the whole magazine the day you got it. They didn't pile up like they do every place else. And I love mail twice a week.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on rainy days.
Oh, God, yeah, the rainy days. If you had groceries, you stayed home. If there's nothing in your refrigerator, you could feed somebody. You left. And either Harry and Lena or Ralph and Jesse were sure ringers to come visiting. And I just loved it. Did Jesse was a character, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's a watercolor of seltzers just nailed on the cabin wall,
Mom and Dad are appreciators of Western art.
Uh-huh. And so after Jesse and Ralph died, my Baird and I tried to pursue that and thought we would like to have that painting. Well, we paid through the nose for it because it went through Seltzer's grandson and like forget the artist over there, our gallery owner over in Big Fork. But anyhow, we did get the painting. Mm-hmm. But it's nice. The only it's got the thumbtack hole in the corner, but it's now framed.
But yes, we'd get these large groups of people like the Hokums and Bud and Susie.
Well, the thing about it is, Ralph and Esther would go, they would get us a week's supply of meat, at the meat supply and bring it up. So I'd get a big roast and you figure, well, some days, Jack and Noni would come with all their kids. Mom and Pa would come, eat our whole supply of all week's groceries.
Uh-oh.
We had tin cans, we had chicken fricassee and Denny Moore beef stew, stuff, the one you ran out of refrigeration, you just didn't have.
Mm-hmm. But I can remember playing cards on the porch with the kids, and it was just a real community type of thing.
Well, we had that, but the thing is, when we lived, we had those early, until the 60s, we built the Hammer Cabin. We had this little homesteader cabin and a screened-in porch with the table in it. So no matter what the temperature, you had to eat on the porch.
That could be kind of cool.
Yeah, they're sitting there with their winter coats on. And we had wonderful experiences. Bud and Susie would come up and we'd go hiking. And remember on the last, before we had to get the kids home in school, you could drive up to Whale Lake, and that year they had coffee in 4-pound containers. So I can remember Baird telling me, I said, take the soup pot, see if we can get rid of it. We're going to leave the next week back for Illinois. So he put the coffee can in and went in the open and the Holcombs are up there, and kids saying, Jingle Bells is smelling like crazy. Look there. And they were so grateful for that soup.
Back to animals. One summer was the year of the mountain lion.
Oh, my Aunt Helen would come over in the fall, and brought Mark, and I don't know whether it's Mark and Baird. He'd often bring Mark and his friends, so all his friends were kind of my kids too. But it was in the early fall, and they were there. I know it was Halloween because I had cobwebbed the back door and made, you know, spooky for the kids. And I was always the first one up, and came down the stairs and looked, and here was a mountain lion looking in the window. And I thought, oh, by the time I go up and alert somebody. Well, there were three of them, and they stayed. So I went up, and I woke Baird. He came down, and we looked at him, and then got everybody up. So I even have some photographs of the mountain lions looking in the window. Another time, I got up early when we'd first gotten there. And I started the fire and thought, a lot of smoke here. And must have put too much wax on the stove or something. I went in the bathroom and it was solid smoke. Realized the stove had to be put out, and I just got it roaring good. So I tried this, and then I went upstairs to wake Baird. And the smoke, it was right above his head in bed. I think I have a problem. He opened his eyes. Yeah!
Yes!
What it was a bird had gotten down the chimney and scraped like that, and all the ash went down.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so we had
blocked
to
clean. Yeah.
Oh, those days when we had to clean the stove. Oh. A lot of miserable jobs.
Mm-hmm. What was the road like when you first came up to the
We
North
came
Bird?
Up from West Glacier in Parkside for long years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we were so stupid. We called them tamarack trees, but they were yellow pine. I don't know whether it's still there. Every time Baird and I tried to take that inside road down, it wasn't open.
Mm-hmm.
So we never were able to go back. But this was where we didn't eat. We'd have sandwiches or something on the way up.
Uh-huh.
It took a long time to get up there. Then across a pole bridge and then come up. I can't remember which year we started. Well, I guess when they reconstructed the road to Columbia Falls.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was, you know, two grass lined tracks, and you thank you, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
And I was never comfortable going down those hills, and especially my legs are tired from putting on the brakes. You know, I'm not comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember the old Fool Hen Hill. I used to hate it after. Yeah, before they put the fences up.
Yeah.
I'm just not easy.
Yeah.
But no, I remember I often wonder what happened or where they took the road. I'm not smart enough to know. I've seen the name of the thing where they had the tree with a cabin in it. We used to come by on the road to Columbia Falls. Little cabin with a bit attached to a tree.
Hmm.
And it was, I can't recall the...
What, Blankenship? What?
Oh, what was it called? I've seen the sign. It's down there. The hill is someplace there.
What the road was called or the cabin?
Hmm?
What was called?
I can't remember the name of the place where this cabin was. It's someplace to the west of the new road, or the road to Columbia Falls. I'll think of it at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember Peggy and I, one time we drove yesterday, we had her mail route, and then she'd come back up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a series of been raining, so Peggy and I went with her down. So she had to go down to Columbia Falls and back up. I think she went across Blankenship, though. And then back to West Glacier, and then back up the North Fork.
Mm-hmm.
And this hill, Rabbit Hill? Rabbit Hill?
It's.
I remember when grinding down in her little, it was a Plymouth or something, and mud this deep, and she'd grind it up and take it on the...
Hmm.
Yeah, little glimpses that I do remember. Remember Peggy was collecting leeches for some class she was taking in. And I'm in a mud lake in the park. Mm. Go pick up leeches.
So were you around on the North Fork for any of the big fires that happened?
No, they were...
Actually,
67 was in there, 67. That we were here. Mm-hmm. That was the first time uh-huh. we ever were close to a fire. It's the first time I heard the fire. I'd never heard.
It was that close.
We had to go on our way to town.
Yeah, we had to take Debbie back, was going back to. Mm-hmm. We had to take her down to get on the bus for Tetons or Jackson.
And for some reason, we were stopped by the side of the road, and you could...
Well, they stopped us. Mm-hmm. That was when the Camas Bridge was just, I'm almost saving the equipment, but mm-hmm. this is where the fire was burning. And I can still, it was just all along. And the noise, unreal, I've never heard one. And when the Red Bench fire happened... Mm-hmm. We had stopped the mail. We'd eaten most of our groceries and were leaving that weekend. Mm-hmm. And the roads were closed.
Oh.
And so we had no mail. I reread. Somehow or another, I got hooked on the Reader's Digest condensed books and wanting them out of my house and brought them out there. I reread every one of those. No mail, no nothing. We'd go down and get the fire report and so forth. But thank God my son made fires real to me because mm-hmm. Uncle Bug and I remember when Uncle Bug and I were there by ourselves and we'd have electrical storm. I'd think, oh, we're going to burn up and the fire's going to start and get us right now and so forth and being worried. And Alan was on the Yellowstone fire and during the time of the Red Bench fire. And he came up, and he was so ill. He has, of course, lung problems and allergies, and they kept him an extra week down there doing some training for the next step up. And he said, I have to go back to my doctor, you know, so I says, you're safe. You have 2 weeks between you. Nothing's going to happen. All the neighbors were taking, loading their stuff and going down the road, darn it, with stuff on their trucks and getting out of there. Mm-hmm. Well, the roads were closed. Mm-hmm. They even closed it over Trail Creek Divide. So here we sat, and it just made us realize that mm-hmm. how fire burns, it's a real science, and mm-hmm. dumb heads like us have to have a stick over the head before we understand.
Mm-hmm. And that fire of 67 was influential in Alan's life. That's when he decided he wanted forestry. He wanted to fight fire.
Oh.
What was the name of the guy who was the fire chief there?
I don't know.
Oh, he was a neat guy. You know, in the olden days, all the road crew, they'd come in and have coffee and all these mm-hmm. people. And during the course of the years, we've met a lot of the people. They come up, Baird had an untold number of maps. Somebody was always coming in for a map. And so we met a lot of people.
I know what you always commented on about the people up there is no matter what area of life you came from,
you're equal up there. Mm-hmm. The minute somebody came in and started talking what they had back in their garage or something,
yeah,
it doesn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the nicest things about there, that anybody who tries to pull top dog up there,
yeah.
You know, and Baird and I had some pangs when we realized why people like the Holcombs had to sell their place. Mm-hmm. And stuff. I mean, they needed the money, and the mm-hmm. only way to make money up mm-hmm. there is to sell your ground, mm-hmm. unless you have some unusual talent. But you know, we learned so much from the homesteaders. Mm-hmm. The first thing Ma Holcomb told us is, "You want to make a road to the river first." You know, yeah, she'd had the experience, of course, but But you know, when that influx of young people came in their little 10, 20 acre spot, they didn't need any advice. They knew everything. They didn't stay long either. Have you discovered this?
Yeah, most people have been up there a while.
Or come and go,
mm-hmm. Right?
But the thing is that it's different than any other area of the country that I can think of.
Yeah.
And it pays to know. Well, of course, I learned from Carrie's husband, now dead. He came in, he worked and built the cabin. Uh-huh. It worked on the cabin that we now live in. And we thought, you know, there's a special way you do things on the North Fork. Well, first thing I know, here was a a toaster came first.
Ooh.
And then pretty soon here was a microwave. Yeah, well, an electric coffee pot. Well, when we turn on the generator, we've got power. But the thing that he didn't much like making kindling, so he dispensed with the kindling and used his blowtorch.
Oh.
I mean, he was just...
Sacrilege.
He was the best company. He was cheerful and joking, and I thought, no.
He thought outside the box. The rest of us were very... Yeah. That's good in some ways.
Organized. Then I got to thinking about Beard's mother, who always liked to do things the old way because she used lint pots.
Yeah, right.
My mother, boy, when they came out with cake mixes, an instant coffee, my husband never forgave her for that. Why do this? After five kids? She was grateful. Anything new, she was for. Uh-huh. So there's a happy medium. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 But no, we've had wonderful experiences up there. The Bear Boys are still in touch with one of them closely. Uh-huh. You know, the Diaper Grizzly.
Jonkel's study back in 76, 75,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
When they were trying to capture the Guy for Grizzly. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you notice, the North Fork has a people with very strong opinions.
I've noticed that.
Quick to judge. And Baird and I were really kind of traumatized because these kids who were working for Dr. Jonkel were the same age as our kids. And people were, don't come on my property, damning the progress and process that they were doing under the auspices of the university and so forth. I thought, whatever it is, those kids don't deserve it. So Baird and I go down the road and tell them, look, kids, you can come to our house. You can set your traps on our house and they don't catch it. We're not a crime. So we had a wonderful relationship with them.
That's
great. They'd come in. I could write another book about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I bet they told you a lot of what they were doing too.
Oh,
great.
Oh, they tell us what they had to do. They go to town and pick up their bait and what they had. The beanie weenies. Oh, last night we found steaks. Well, they were staying up at the Ninko cabin, and we didn't. We didn't realize what a high place they put us on till they invited us to Ninko Cabin for dinner. Well, I'd never been to Ninko Cabin. And so Baird and I go up there, and they'd drawn straws about who was going to stay home and cook. And I thought, what are these kids going to do? We're going to eat out of the dumpsters.
It took forever to get there.
They had a canned ham and they made apple salad. I can't remember a lot of things. But after it was all over, they bought a pint of whiskey. Thought maybe we'd like a drink after. They were just so dear. I can't remember what we had. I mean, they did everything beautifully. But the thing about it, I had never ever seen. They were eating on the old Forest Service plates, the engraved things. I thought, shh, they should have been preserving those. So I don't know. I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Too many things have crawled out from.
Yeah. Things. Yeah, I've disappeared.
As much as I would have loved to have one, but I wouldn't. I mean, that's not my cup of tea.
Right. Well, I bet you've seen a lot of changes on the North Fork.
Yes. When we first came up, I mean, we didn't know any of them. The mailboxes, you know, no indication. I think this was one of the reasons that people started vandalizing. They think nobody lives there. They don't know that there are people back in the woods, and even so now. And I know when we came up the road, and they had kids and, you know, moose, whale, creepy trail, and they'd make up notes that we didn't know the people, like Fig Newton, Frank and Ethel. Oh, and they were such wonderful people.
Yeah.
They were at our house for dinner one night, and we had that sassy little dog, and Frank was sitting there with a cracker in his mouth, in his hand, and Tiny jumped up. Did you see what that? We had awful dogs.
Oh, yeah, and Frank Evans. We have a lot of Frank Evans stories, too.
Oh, yeah, Frank. We weren't.
Ted Ross, all the Pulper stories.
Uh-huh. You know. Did you know Bert and Thelma Edwards? Did you know Bert
and
Thelma?
Yes, but it wasn't. It wasn't either one of those close relationships, but Alan, by the time he got to the university, was a forestry student. Bert was just fantastic. He was blind.
Mm-hmm.
He knew Alan, and he talked forestry. And Thelma was always had fun with Thelma. Well, we weren't the kind to exchange dinner invitations or anything like that. But I might say that her kids, going to the hall, and our kids, Wes was the only one that was within, you know, the age group of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they, these big boys, the McFarlands and the Edwards, but they were cowboy boots and square dancing and just having a fine time. And the Moss girls, Karen and her older sisters are dancing and so forth. We had not experienced that. We did a few things, you know, because everybody else did them, but when we went home in fall, we decided that we'd take square dance lessons so we could enjoy the fun. So our kids wanted to join too, and the caller said, well, he didn't take boy and girlfriends because they always broke up. I said, this is brother and sister. So they let them.
So we were stuck with each other. Yes.
Yeah. So it was great.
That's
great. We brought a caller out. Max Roberts was a dear friend of ours, and he brought his friend out. And what was his name?
I don't remember.
But he was always talking about B.C. You know, comparing our place with his place up in British Columbia. B.C., well, I can't remember the name of the point. Anyhow. Who's the teacher down there at the trailer park?
Oh, Pittman's.
Pittman's, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Offered to take him for a float. And what's his face? I can't remember his name. Carried a knife in his hip pocket. Huh. And he had a rubber rat.
Ooh.
It could have killed him.
Jeez.
They came spit with it. That was when Tim got home from the dance and we're having our nightcap sitting there talking, and Alan comes over and says, Tim's got a pain in his stomach just like appendicitis. This is 2 o'clock in the morning. So put him on the bench and figured he was really tender where the appendix would be. So I can still remember your father saying, Tim, if you don't have appendicitis, I'm going to have to take him out anyhow. This is the only kid I ever have up there that I wanted to send with this bag down the road.
Mom and Dad always had nieces and nephews come out with them. Uh-huh. It was always more than my brother and I.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Tim got so, I don't know. I think Carrie worked her magic on him because when we got home, his mother sent me an Afghan. She had made one of those granny Afghans.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful things. She said, I don't know what you did to Tim out there this summer. He came home completely changed.
I just think the North Fork worked its magic.
Yeah.
Really, when you experience a place like that, it can be life-changing.
It does, yeah.
Well, then he got so pious we couldn't stand him.
Sometimes too much.
Well, we have just about, come to the end of questions that I have. Is there anything that I missed or that you would like to add?
Well, I just can't express my appreciation for my own children mm-hmm. who like the same things that we did, you know.
That's a blessing.
The only way that they appreciate, both of them just love the cabin. And I don't know whether Alan does all work or he partially hides up there. But he's taking very good care of the place.
Uh-huh.
And Karen Carr is still working, and she's one who's tending me mostly, so she can't do it and have any fun. She has to look out for me. Oh, I can't but
have
the thought
kids.
Of other people listening to this.
I know. You're just...
Crazy old lady.
Oh, no.
But all the things we've learned up there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I remember when Alan was promised a hunting trip when he was, good grapes. And Bruce, we raised a nephew, too. And the same offer was his. If you get all on the honor roll by the time you're junior, why, we'll take you hunting. Because at that time, then it was even expensive to buy an out-of-state mm-hmm. hunting license.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce could never muster it, but Alan did. Well, I can still remember getting up there. Carrie was just sitting reading her books on the Davenport, and Alan said, you got to get outside, and taking those old, the grocery boxes and slid down the...
Sledding down the hills.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you know, you have to make your own things.
Uh-huh.
And but the thing is, they too, the congeniality of the young people up there.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth Saunderson always had all these nephews up there. I can't remember. Well, Ethel Newton's grandson.
Larry.
Mm-hmm. He was the one who was killed in a truck fire. He was one of the contemporaries of our kids. And he would make the sound of all state insurance, that horrible
honking.
Sound. And they'd get in their little boats and go over to Bowman Lake and get a big boat. And it was hard on. I mean, they were hard. One time, I don't know how I cured my kids of ever having another party. But we had a party, and it rained that night. Dad stood out under a tarp and cooked hamburgers, and we pushed everything back and got the hall thing and all the records.
Square dance records.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And here comes these big kids, along with Wes and
Larry.
And the big kids, sitting there. They had it, from sixth grade to high school was all.
Mm-hmm.
After high school, you couldn't come. I mean, this was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I remember one little gal from the park, and I never knew who she was, but sat the whole time on the stairway. But they would only dance till they cut down the old pine tree. But when they all came in, and sat down. And I thought, what are we going to do here? So, in order to introduce them all, I said, now, you give your name, address, and your zip code. It just come in to the person sitting next to you. And then they will give your, round the thing. Well, apparently that solved the problem because it worked out well. they start talking. But you know, when you get a bunch of kids that age, they can just be, well, I thought I was in for deep doo-doo, but I thought it was a great party, and the kids never would have another one. I don't know what was, never, never.
Yeah, speaking of kids, I remember when Richard Hildren was a kid.
Oh, hell, and Richard.
Granny Chrisman liked to bake sugar cookies also.
What?
Liked to bake sugar cookies, too.
Oh, Granny would make sugar cookies. I remember him coming in the little cabin and saying, never seen that many cookies in his life. Well, Granny was the kind that would use up all my flour and never tell me. For 50 miles down. Yeah. But Richard came up with the foremans, and he hauled a lot of rocks for us, and did some
stuff.
There
was this huge pile, I mean, covered us, card table size, cookies.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't imagine baking that many on a wood stove.
Me either.
On the one time, she was staying with us, and we had the trailer, and Orville and Helen would come for dinner, and she did things like fried chicken, and she made wonderful biscuits, and fried chicken on the cook stove and so forth, but she was in the little trailer baking biscuits. And of course, we were inside and being jolly and everything. She came in, she told me afterwards, and she came out of the trailer, she dropped all the biscuits down in the and just picked them up and blew them off. Oh, yeah, this is in North Fork.
This is in North Fork.
Yeah.
It's okay. We all live through it.
Well, you know, things are different now, I know. And that they're always checking my outdated buy, you know, canned goods and stuff. Shucks. Look how long. My mother canned an open kettle and green beans and corn and everything. I never died of poison. I think she, I mean, I don't know. It's whether the, I'm sure we have different strains of stuff, and I don't intend to poison anybody. But
yeah.
The price of refrigeration up there.
Mm-hmm. Anything more about the North Fork you'd like to add?
But Walt and Hazel were very difficult to get along with, and then when we had him, we went down. What prompted our first cabin was a Woman's Day magazine had come out with how you and your partner can build a cabin in a weekend for 105 man hours for $100. And it was an A-frame chicken coop. Well, you know, the woman's staying. Well, boy, you know, when you're young, you can do this. So then we got to thinking about it because the mice were coming in, and I'm not big on... We kept our dishes all on barrack-built shelves above this cabinet where we kept our food so the mice couldn't get them. And so you never use the top plate. I got so callous about it, just take off the... Pretty soon it didn't make any difference whether the... we went down to talk to Walt and Hazel Hammer about building this cabin, and thought maybe a small one like what they had, their two rental cabin. And it kind of snowballed. It was... we had a wonderful relationship with the Hammers. Unfortunately, things weren't good for them up there. I could see what was happening, being an outsider, but they were baited and such. But they had so much to allow. Hi, Mom. He was so good to our kids. He'd bring skulls, remember? And talk to them and taught them, and they were just delightful until it came to things that were near and dear, like highways and telephones. You know, we had a differing opinion there. But I think Larry Wilson had it right, and he says, you know what's wrong with them? He says, Hazel says the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and Walt agrees. They're reading too much Time magazine. But no, they took offense. It's like Tom Reynolds helped Walt at times on our cabin. But then they had a falling out. And I've learned after just listening, that I figured that the thing was that Tom had been gone up to see Marie Peterson when Marie was up on Trail Creek, and Hazel had made some flimp remark about Tom courting Marie Peterson. And that, I mean, a simple thing, like, you know. Mm-hmm. So you just can't believe anything you hear on the North Pole.
It's probably true today, too.
Right, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really have enjoyed this interview.
Can I give you coffee or tea?
Can we have iced tea?
Oh, well, let me finish this up here. Okay. Anyway, I want to thank you for your interview, and on behalf of the North Fork Landowners Association and the North Fork History Project, thank you.
You're most welcome.